Thanks for taking the time to download this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. To find other programmes you might be interested in, click bbc.co.uk/5live, where you'll also find our terms of use.
This is Nicky Campbell, and this is the podcast of the 5 Live News phone-in, where you have your say. We're live every weekday from 9am, so don't phone or text in now. Should sexuality be grounds for asylum? We're joined in the studio by Ben Summerskill, Chief Executive of Stonewall. Ben, good morning to you.
Morning.
And Sir Andrew Green, Chairman of Migration Watch UK. Sir Andrew, hello.
Good morning to you.
We'll have Dave in Newport in a minute, and maybe you on the phone too, 0500 909 693. Are you there, Dave?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Sir Andrew Green, many texts on this. Darren in Leicester says, anyone can claim to be gay or lesbian and not just to claim asylum. What next? Short or tall people, fat or thin? The list could go on and on. Every Tom, Dick and Abdul will be granted rights to stay, putting more and more pressure on local services and housing. That's from Darren in Leicester. So, Andrew Green, do you have sympathy for that texter?
Well, I wouldn't put it like that. I think, let me say first of all, this is not about whether it's good or bad to be gay. I hope that is obvious. Secondly, we are in favour of asylum. But it can only be for those who have a genuine fear of persecution. That's the rock bottom key point. That's what international law provides for, and that's what the courts are here to determine. And unless that's the case, they should not be granted asylum. Of course not.
Ben Summerskill.
Well, I think the issue is the real fear of persecution.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the problem we've got is that the evidence is that people who have been persecuted, people who've actually been tortured, are being sent back to countries where they're likely to face even worse circumstances. And Stonewall has recently done some groundbreaking research which involved interviewing staff of the UK Borders Agency who actually admitted that they had no idea how to interview people about these issues. One gentleman said his test for whether someone was gay or not was to ask them if they'd read Oscar Wilde. Well, on that basis, I think there are quite a lot of gay people in this country who wouldn't pass the examination.
That is a crass, isn't it? Like saying, what film did Judy Garland star in with James Mason or something?
Categorically, and sometimes these people are arriving traumatised. Mm. They're arriving in this country unable to communicate, terrified to talk to people in positions of authority, and they're risking being sent back. I mean, I spoke to someone not very long ago who had been given electric shock treatment in Iran and knows someone who'd been hung, and he was told by the UK Border Agency that he should go back to Iran and be more discreet in future.
On that point, Sir Andrew Green, I mean, do you not think there is a genuine possibility of persecution for many people? I've got a list here of countries in the world where homosexuality is illegal. Yes. Do you say go home and be discreet?
No. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying first of all, it's for the courts to determine. Secondly, what we would say is that you can't have a presumption that gays and lesbians from particular countries can apply for asylum. Mm-hmm. If you have that assumption, then you run into the huge numbers. I don't know what the figures are, but some people say 10% of the world's population are gay or lesbian. You're obviously talking about hundreds of millions. The position is that there has to, and this is the coalition government's position, I understand, is that there has to be a proven risk to the individual. It may very well be that some very junior officials in the Home Office ask some very silly questions. But they are not the people who take the decision. Remember that. Everyone who is turned down by the Home Office has a right of appeal. It then goes to the courts, and the courts decide it, the Immigration Court. If they turn it down, there's one further appeal. And after that, you can appeal against removal directions and so on. So there's a whole judicial system.
Yes, but unfortunately, Sir Andrew,
if I may make one other point that your listeners may not be aware of, I think the courts, in general, try to bend over backwards to be fair. You probably know that the criminal test of evidence is beyond reasonable doubt. The civil test is the balance of probabilities. But in asylum cases, there is a special and much easier test, which is a reasonable degree of likelihood. So it goes to the courts and they try their best.
Right.
Well, I think people will be very grateful for Sir Andrew's tutorial on the system of appeals,
but the
reality is there is evidence of judges in the Immigration Appeals Tribunal using offensive and belittling language.
Let's speak to an immigration judge who's called us.
About gay people.
If I may, Ben. Peter in Birmingham. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, Nicky. Yeah,
Dave, I'll be with you shortly. We've got Robert in Weston-super-Mare as well. Hello to you, Robert. How are you?
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. Peter, an immigration judge, OK?
Yes.
What would you like to say?
The issue really is, well, as a judge, it comes down to the genuineness or otherwise of the claimant. We find, our experience is, that a good many claimants suddenly endow themselves with this sexuality for the benefit of their claim, i.e. they've lived in their respective countries without difficulty, they've come to this country and eventually claim asylum, and then they are claiming to be homosexual or lesbians. And the question
Have you actually had experience of that, where you have doubted the genuineness of somebody making that claim?
Oh, Nicky, it happens all the time. My personal experience is, particularly with Jamaicans, that happens frequently. That you know that, you know, they've been put up to it, and I have to be careful when I say, but you feel that they've gone along to the solicitor to claim or be advised with regard to asylum. He says, well, if you're a homosexual or lesbian, of course, you will succeed.
And, Peter, I'm a little bit confused. You say you're an immigration judge and you talk about homosexuals or lesbians. I mean, lesbians are homosexuals. You're either evidencing that you haven't got much of a grasp of these issues, which I think rather proves our point, or perhaps you're not an immigration judge at all.
Well, I find that really quite insulting. But anyway, the point
you've demonstrated the very point I made, that you don't have much of a grasp of these issues. Where is it you sit, Peter?
Well, I'm not going to disclose that.
I have a very firm
grasp of the immigration law. I have a great deal of experience of dealing with homosexual and lesbian claimants, and I'm just telling you.
But you can't tell us where where you sit.
Well, that's not relevant.
Of course,
it doesn't matter whether I sit in North Shields or Hatton Cross.
Well, of course, it's relevant. You're a public official in a public position making statements on an issue of public policy, and you're saying you want to do it with a brown paper bag over your head.
Not at all. It doesn't matter to anyone, any listener, whether I'm sitting in North Shields or Hatton Cross. I'm just telling you, I'm an immigration judge with considerable experience in dealing with these claimants, and a good many of them, in my experience, are not genuine. They endow themselves with this.
All right. Well, this is obviously a point for debate. Stay there. Robert's in Weston-super-Mare, as I say. Dave in Newport. We'll get Robert and Dave talking about this as well. Dave, what would you like to say this morning?
My concern would be that for all of the genuine people out there who will need asylum in this country due to persecution for their sexuality, there's probably going to be hundreds, if not thousands, that will try to get into this country in a non-genuine way. And eventually, we'd have to stop it. It would have to be stopped across the board, because you can't prove, I don't see how anybody can prove, how a judge sitting in a court, one person, can make a judgment on whether somebody is or somebody isn't gay or lesbian. So at some point, we'll reach a limit where we can't take anybody else because we've got so many people trying to do it. And then those genuine people from countries where they are being persecuted won't be able to come to this country. And I just don't see how we have to draw a line somewhere, and I don't see how we can do that in a fair way trying to judge somebody on their sexuality.
Yeah, but Dave, I think you're completely right. I mean, the issue is we shouldn't be opening the doors to anyone who says they're lesbian or gay or homosexual or lesbian, as Peter says. The issue should be, can they prove that they have been persecuted? And the issue for the UK Border Agency and for those people who are immigration staff and indeed judges is how you determine that in a fair way. But you have to be able to cross-examine them respectfully and sympathetically. And I think, you know, Peter's already demonstrated
Is it a question of ascertaining as to whether they are actually gay or lesbian, or is it a question of ascertaining whether they have been persecuted? Persecuted.
Yeah, no, the issue has to be: have they been persecuted? Right.
Because how do they prove that as well? I mean, you're someone coming from with perhaps no money, with perhaps a little grasp of the English language, coming into this country looking for help. and we're asking them to provide evidence and proof that they've been persecuted for being gay in their country. How are they going to prove that?
Well, certainly, I referred to someone who's had electric shock treatment. He's still got the burdens.
Right. But, yeah, that's one way, obviously. But they're going to be... I'm just to make clear that I'm 100%.
But aren't there some
people coming into this country for help if they need it?
But aren't there some non-negotiable countries where homosexual... What do you think, Robert, in Western... Hello there. Hi, Robert.
Hi there, how you doing?
What about some... countries where it is illegal, where there is the death penalty just because of your sexuality. Is that not non-negotiable, Andrew Green? What do you think? If you come from Saudi Arabia where there's a death penalty, or let me see, where else? The Chechen Republic, Afghanistan, so much for human rights. Pakistan, there are many other countries across the world. If somebody came from those countries, look, I'm gay, it's just a matter of saying, come in, isn't it?
Well, first of all, you've mentioned a number of countries whose population is getting on for 200 million, which underlines my first point and your point, I think, which the numbers would run out of hand very quickly. Secondly, it's clearly very hard to determine sexuality. That's not what the courts are asked to do. They're asked to decide whether they have a genuine fear of persecution on their return. Now, clearly, if they arrive with scars that are genuine, then that is a very strong piece of evidence.
But if they were to go home, they would be executed.
Can I just make a more general point, which is that if we're not very careful about this, we're going to undermine public support for genuine cases. And I think some of the people who phoned in already to your programme are reflecting that people are very happy to grant asylum to people who really do have a genuine fear. But what they don't want is a rush of cases that are bogus, and that immigration judge, who clearly is genuine, has a lot of experience of it.
Robert in Weston-super-Mare, and then John in Dumbarton, too. Hello, John, how are you? Robert, what would you like to say? On you go, sorry.
It's just in regards to the point of if they are, even if they're worst-case scenario, they are making the case up to come over here. Isn't that more worrying that these people want to leave their own country enough to come over here? And in all frankness, we have to let them come in, because the fact is, as a country, we've raped and pillaged pretty much every nation on this planet at some point or another. And if we're now if we now have to open up our borders, as it were, and let the people in, then I personally don't see a problem with that.
Well, this is the Empire Strikes Back sort of thing. Yeah, I mean,
we've had hundreds of years of abusing and taking other nations and being more than happy to take their money and their minerals and their natural resources.
No.
And if that country's now got to a point where people want to leave, whether it through being gay or whatever other reason, then I'm sorry, it's the tables have turned.
The history of Africa is full of countries raping and pillaging each other throughout history before we even knew Africa existed. I mean, how far back do you go? John, what do you want to say? Good morning, John.
Well, I listen to the BBC a lot, particularly the World Service. There was a programme about Jamaica. It was Batty Boys, how they were chased through the streets and they weren't even protected by the police. There was another incident, and it was South Africa, so-called wonderful gay rights enshrined in law. Selective rape, lesbians being raped, corrective rape, sorry. There's a case of Iran a couple of years ago, I saw on Sky News, two 16-year-old boys hung. Another thing on the BBC World Service about Palestine, how gay people are terrified because of the rise of Hamas.
Yeah.
They have been actually fleeing to Israel, and they're being blackmailed by the Israeli Secret Service. So there's evidence from the BBC and other sources that there's 80 countries gay people could face imprisonment.
Do you agree? Indeed, there is. But do you agree with Peter, our immigration judge, who's... are you still there, Peter?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, people need to prove...
claimed immigration judge.
Genuineness.
Well, there was a programme, it was on the Women's Hour. The woman from Africa, she was smuggled up, but she was subjected to lots and lots of questionings. She had all sorts of questions. She was really felt quite degraded. So she had to prove a lot of things before she could get asylum. We have people in this country who are here who incite racial hatred, various clerics. Now, they can't be sent back because they might face persecution. How much more deserving are gay people fleeing from persecution or murder to be allowed in, and yet people like clerics are not deported? So I think Ben's doing a good job. There are definitely cases all over the world where gay people are being persecuted. You mentioned Africa. Do you remember that horror law in Uganda that was going to be a death penalty? That was rescinded because of world pressure. Countries like Canada are looking at their foreign aid, their overseas aid, and say, well, maybe it's time we stopped sending these countries foreign aid if they're going to murder people. But I'm saying that judge you're talking about...
Should we not be seeking to change primitive attitudes, as many would call them, in these countries rather than let people from these countries come into this country because of sexuality. Isn't it a sort of an element of, people will be persecuted, but in the long run, countries will change if there is a strong gay communities within.
You're a great mind, Nicky. That's what I'm thinking. That's the long term. It'll take decades to change attitudes in Africa, but you've got to make it plain to these countries. If that's the way they want to treat gay people, like the Nazis treated Jewish people, then there's going to be consequences. Why should we be sending foreign aid to these countries where they're going to execute people like me? That's a long-term point. But in the meantime, we've got to make sure that people that generally do face persecution or murder are not discriminated against. We wouldn't deem us sending the Jewish people back to Germany in the 1930s and say, oh, well, it's just that judge, I could hardly believe what I was listening. I'd like to vet some of these judges to see what prejudices they have, whether they're extremely Christian fundamentalists or not, because it's clearly some of their attitudes are primeval towards gay people.
Ben Summers.
I mean, something, Nicky, you've touched on, which is really important and our recent research uncovered, is that quite often the UK border agency staff don't actually have accurate information about what the Home Office calls country of origin. They don't actually have some of the detail that you've been able to establish very easily, and therefore, of course, it's quite understandable that there's ignorance. I think the other thing that it's important to bear in mind is, of course, we don't send people back to countries where they'll be persecuted on grounds of their religion.
Yeah.
We don't say, well, we'll wait, you know, several decades or possibly 100 years until these countries become more tolerant. We accept that as grounds for actually granting genuine.
There's a text here, though, said the forgotten issue, this text says, is that if homosexuality is against the law, they're running from the law. We wouldn't give asylum to drug dealers saying they're being persecuted. That is a view.
Well, that sounds like the sort of view that would go down well with someone like Peter or some of these judges we've heard who aren't anonymous. But that clearly is something that I think is not a view that's held by lots of people in modern Britain. And happily, you know, we've persuaded the new government, not just the Liberal Democrats, but the Conservatives, that's not a view that's acceptable in modern Britain.
John still with us in Dumbarton, Sir Andrew Green as well, Christopher in Northampton, Peter in Birmingham, our immigration judge. And there's a text here which says, I'm a barrister doing immigration work. I suspect that as few as 5% of cases are genuine. You can tell easily when they are. The gay lesbian claim from Jamaica, Africa and the Middle East is commonplace. That's your experience, Peter, in Birmingham as an immigration judge, isn't it? That's what you were telling us earlier
right.
on. Yeah.
One of our problems is, Nicky, that so often these days there is no representation in the immigration court by the Home Office, so that you have the claimant with his representative in front of us, the immigration judge, with nobody from the Home Office there to challenge the appellant's evidence or claim.
So if he says, I am gay, and if I go back to my own country, I will be persecuted, what do you then ask him?
Well, we can ask questions for clarification, Nicky. Now, that may sound a little bit sort of woolly, but it's very, very difficult. And, the Home Office, as I say, don't help themselves by not putting representatives into court.
What sort of questions for clarification, if I may ask?
Well, okay. I mean, for instance, somebody who's come to this country, been here for some time and claims asylum eventually, you would say, well, how did you manage to survive in Jamaica, use that as an example, without any difficulty from the authorities if, you now say that you will be persecuted on account of that if you go back to Jamaica. You know, that happens a lot of the time. These people come out of the woodwork when a new fashion comes into play for asylum seekers. So, suddenly they say, oh, I'm a homosexual. Well, okay, but how did you survive in Jamaica for 25 years, without any problems? And that sort of thing.
John?
They probably lived in the closet for 25 years or went into a fake marriage. But you can make sure that these people, if they do turn to be fake, you should monitor them for a number of years while that's part of their conditions. And if for any reason you have suspicions and they suddenly end up getting married to a woman, then that would call into question their claim and their status. And it might also mean that they could be deported again.
So you can't come in if you're bisexual?
Well, that's right. I mean, they claim to be bisexual if they've got married.
Hmm.
I don't think bisexual people are being killed in Uganda being put to death in Iraq. That's another country that's recently been.
You find out their history, and you find out that they have girlfriends, they've reared children in this country, and you then ask the question about their homosexuality, and they say, well, I'm bisexual.
Well, if they're bisexual in the country they're living in, they've got a wife and a kids, they're hardly going to be murdered for being gay, are they? They're hardly going to be saying, well, you're a homosexual. Well, how can I be? I've got a wife and two or three kids. That's their cover story. They're perfectly safe. But if they're found in bed with another man, or in the case of a lesbian, another woman, then it's a different kettle of fish. They can't say, well, that would put their life at risk. So, but you could monitor the people. We've got people coming in here for arranged marriages and all sorts of things. We don't seem to have a witch hunt on them.
Well, Graham in Huntingdon, in a segment. Christopher, sorry, I did introduce you, never came to you. What would you like to say? It's really a point for Saranda, isn't it, about the whole system of asylum?
It is. I thought under the rules for seeking asylum that you were to go to the next safe haven country for seeking asylum. So if you live in country A, you go to country B. And if obviously that's still too dangerous, then you go to country C. We're the United Kingdom and we're you, so why are people coming from all these far countries, going through all these safe haven countries, coming to us? Is that grounds for, like, nobody really should be seeking asylum in this country because they haven't got grounds? They've got all those other countries to go to.
Sir Andrew Green.
Yes, well, that's a very good point. The rule is that you should seek asylum in the first safe country.
Yes.
Our difficulty often is we can't prove what was the first safe country. If they arrive from France, and of course they're queuing up in Calais in the hundreds, we can't then send them back to France because the French say, well, we weren't the first country, they may have come in through Greece or whatever. So that rule is not being properly observed. But it does leave open the question that Christopher raises as to why they want to come to Britain and have not themselves chosen to seek asylum elsewhere. Now, part of the answer to that emerged only a couple of weeks ago when we saw the figures for how many people are actually granted asylum in different countries. And in Britain, you are twice as likely as in France to be granted asylum at the first instance. If you then include all the appeal processes, then you've got a 50% better chance in Britain than you have in France. So that partly explains it. The other thing to bear in mind is that it sounds as though we're making some sort of dry legal decision here about asylum or not asylum. But what it means is this. It means if you're granted, you can settle, you can become a citizen, you can bring over your close relatives, you have access to health, education, free housing, the benefit system, and eventually a pension for life. Now, this is a huge prize for someone from a relatively poor country. So we should be very careful who we give it to, and we should not give the impression to the hundreds of millions of people who are genuinely and if they so be it if they choose genuinely homosexual or lesbian, gay or lesbian, then if you're going to open the door to hundreds of millions of people to claim, what you will do is you will completely undermine public support for the whole system, and genuine refugees will be the ones who suffer most.
Well, Sir Andrew, thank you. This is Graham in Huntingdon. Good morning, Graham, and Jackie in Whitby with us too, and Dave in Manchester. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Hello, hi.
Good to have you on the line. Graham first, I was trying to speak to you beforehand, but it's been busy. What would you like to say?
Okay. The problem with any asylum policy, at the end of the day, is that if you are going to accept the idea of asylum, you then have to say that we will accept anybody who believes they have been persecuted.
I better just say, if anyone just joining us, we're discussing this issue this morning, should sexuality be grounds for asylum? Sorry, just if anyone's just tuned in, carry on.
Yeah. So the argument, therefore, is if you accept the idea of asylum, you then have to say, OK, if you believe you're being persecuted in your country, not if we believe you're being persecuted, if you believe you're being persecuted, then you have grounds to ask for asylum. We then have to say, well, do we agree with that or not? But by that standard, you'd be accepting almost everybody in the world who decided they wanted to come here. The only other way to do it is to say we will not have an asylum policy. We will not accept anyone.
Okay, so you're quite clear about that. And what do you think about other laws in other countries about which we fundamentally disapprove?
Well, if the majority of the population in that country believe that law to be correct, and if we believe in democracy, which we apparently do, then who are we to disagree with their perception of the world?
Well, in fairness, quite a lot of these countries aren't democracies, so...
But I'm not saying they're democracies.
People don't have
what
a chance to express a view as to what they think or don't think.
What I'm saying, I'm not saying they're democracies. What I am saying is the majority of the population believe.
But quite often they don't.
Well, how do you know that? You've got no test of it.
Precisely, there is no evidence.
If the country is not prepared to stand up against their government and change the laws to which you object, then one must assume that the majority of people in that country are accepting of the laws that their government has put in place.
I have to say, one of the finest hours in the history of this country was when we stood up to a nation that said its people were, you know, required to do X, Y, and Z, all of which were completely despicable, and Britain was one of the few nations that said that's completely unacceptable. We didn't allow people at that time to say, well, these people haven't expressed a view, these people haven't actually had the opportunity to tell Mr. Hitler that they don't like him, and consequently we won't lift a finger to help them.
So whether it be adulteresses stoned to death, or homosexuals executed, or female circumcision, if it's their laws, get on with it. None of our business, Graham. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the fact of the matter is, the laws in this country maybe 500 or 600 years ago to a large degree were fairly similar. They weren't changed by us running away from the country.
Stay there, Dave. Hello, Dave.
Hello.
You're on.
Hi. Well, I just had first-hand experience of the way in which a Afghan asylum seeker at his tribunal was treated in terms of the fact he was gay. And he basically, as part of his appeal, said that he was gay and that he felt threatened if he was returned to Afghanistan. It was only one part of the whole case, because he'd also lost all his family originally in Afghanistan, and he felt that if he went back he'd be threatened by the Mujahideen there as well, and also the fact that he was gay. And I was actually in the tribunal, and I felt it was a kangaroo court. It was the fact that he was gay was basically dismissed in the way that the UN report says. Basically, it was, if you keep quiet, then the fact that you're gay is irrelevant, basically.
One second, this is fascinating. Graham, do you think that's a valid thing to say? If you go back to your own country and keep quiet and be discreet, do you think that's an argument?
No, I don't think that's an argument, but it doesn't have any sort of connection to what I'm talking about. If we have an asylum policy that says if you are going to be persecuted for being gay, then we have to accept you, then that's the argument. That's where the decision has to be made. Mm-hmm. And if you can prove that you are gay and that you will indeed be persecuted, then by the laws that we've instituted, you should have the right to remain. I'm not arguing with that.
Yeah, okay. Dave, carry on.
Well, I just think it was the way it was summarily dismissed that shocked me, to be honest. And it was this straight judge who probably have no conception of the problems that gay people have, let alone in somewhere like Afghanistan, completely dismissing it as nothing relevant in somebody's life. And I was really shocked. The asylum seeker has since left the country of his own accord. But I'll always remember the case, and basically it was like they were just going through the motions and it was dismissed, and very little was taken into account of the fact that he was gay.
Well, certainly that would be the experience of quite a lot of people, and I think, sadly, there is evidence, and I mentioned it before, that judges who deal with these cases in the Immigration Appeals Tribunal are not, it's not a question of not being sympathetic, they're simply ignorant about the reality of many gay people's lives. They're ignorant about how you talk to people. They're ignorant about how you understand people's lived experience. And quite often they don't even have, you know, the most basic language that's necessary in order to have sensible discussions about people's background and the sort of persecution they have faced.
Sir Andrew, I haven't heard from you for a while.
Yeah, well, these are very difficult cases. We all understand that. And it's very hard to determine sexuality. And you can understand why, partly for that reason, many people would add that into their claim, or possibly even make their claim on that basis. And when you've got a practicing immigration judge and a practicing barrister expressing deep scepticism about some of these cases, then I think one has to accept that it is being abused. The problem is how to stop it being abused and how to make sure that those people who are genuinely in fear of persecution, for whatever reason, including, of course, their gay character, are actually granted asylum. And I come back to the point that the only way to do this is to consider each case by case, as you do for all other kinds of asylum claim. And then when it comes to whether they should go home or not, then you have to look at it country by country and even region by region. Because in many of these countries, you could indeed go to a different part of the country and be perfectly safe there. But the bottom line is we must have a robust system, a system that does make sure that those who are granted this immense privilege of a lifetime in Britain are indeed genuine. If you move away from that, you undermine the entire system. And as I mentioned before, you're doing real harm to people who are really genuine.
Jackie's on the line. It's on asylum, isn't it? So while Sir Andrew is with us. Jackie, good morning. On you go.
Yes. Well, I do agree that the whole culture of disbelief is actually what makes it very difficult. My point that I wanted to make was relating back to the issue of the first safe country that you come to. Because in my experience of helping various asylum seekers, mainly from Cameroon, they are helped by people who get them out in an emergency, often after being imprisoned or having escaped from prison, and then they're helped by perhaps their family or a priest or their church community, and they just get told, well, you're going on this day, and they don't even know when they're on the plane where they're going to end up. And so they're very much in the hands of other people. And I don't believe that... I think that a recent study showed that they don't make their decisions based on what they think will be the situation in the country that they're going to.
It's interesting. Jeff, hello to you.
Hi. Not Mickey.
The world is your oyster. The nation's airwaves are all yours. Speak to Britain.
You know, great show, by the way. I'm just a little bit perturbed that we're all born in countries, and every country's different. It's got its own laws and its own customs, and there are penalties for breaking those laws. Now, in our particular country, England, here, I have to have a driving licence to drive a vehicle, and if I drive without that licence, I suffer prosecution or persecution, as drivers often do. And would that be right for me to flee to a country that says, well, it's okay here to drive without a licence? I feel that we're interfering too much. These people are breaking laws and customs in their own country, and as such, they suffer the consequences, and that's the way of the world.
And Andrew, it's pretty insulting and demeaning, Jeff, I'm sorry, to compare... You know, being snapped by a speed camera with being tortured because you happen to have had a loving relationship.
Of the custom, then such is life, then don't do it.
Well, that's like saying to people, don't practice your religion. We don't say that to people. I mean, you know, we're a civilised country and we recognise that people have freedom of movement and association, and that's
so we are saying that our standards in our country should apply to everyone in the world. Well, that's what we're actually saying here.
No, what we're saying and what immigration judges already say is that they won't return people to countries where they will be persecuted on the grounds of their religion. There's absolutely no reason that exactly the same shouldn't happen with people who will be persecuted on the grounds of their sexual orientation. And let's be crystal clear, sometimes this is nothing to do with whether they are actually found to have had sex. I mean, the couple in Malawi who were going to face the death penalty at one point had just admitted to being homosexual. There was no evidence presented that there had been any activity of any sort whatsoever. So
that's up to the laws and the customs and the people who put those in that country.
No,
it is not up to you or anybody else.
Well, in fairness, you said it was a question of whether they chose to obey the laws. It's not a question of obeying. If you happen to be born homosexual, you don't have a choice about being gay. You're not deciding by virtue of how you're born. Defy the law.
This would have been your approach to apartheid, carrying on this argument to its logic, wouldn't it, Jeff? You would have said, look, that's the way it is there, you know?
I think we're going a little bit different from apartheid, where there's a majority feeling. Here we're talking about a minority, and actually in any given country, if the majority are in their own right against a particular offence against their customs and laws they're being committed, then that's the will of the population, and as such, it should be upheld.
Isn't there a point here, Ben? No, I mean, Islam, in a country that is governed by Sharia law, and you know where homosexuality is absolutely deemed to be wrong, do we have a duty to respect that in any sense?
Well, we have a duty, and I don't think anyone disagrees, to respect people's freedom of religion, but this is pretty dangerous territory we're getting into.
And but if the religion is the law,
well, and
Sharia
in,
law.
In Germany in the 1930s, the recognised religion of the nation was Christianity.
It was deemed
that people who chose to be Jewish were defying...
It is dangerous territory we're getting into, and the reason it's dangerous territory we're getting into is because we're trying to get into it. We shouldn't be getting into it. It's not for us to decide. And if they have committed a crime abroad, just because it isn't a crime here, doesn't make it right.
But Jackie, I hear you in the background.
Sorry.
No. It's quiet. You know, we're on dangerous territory. Do you want to get into it?
Can you just say again what the question was?
People shall abide by the laws and customs of their own country. If it's illegal in a particular country to be gay, we should respect that illegality.
No, I think that the most important thing is that what we're really talking about and what the Home Office is agreeing about is people who have suffered torture and have already been persecuted
exactly.
in different ways in their own country, and it's only then that they try to flee to somewhere safe, and I don't think we're at all talking about floodgates either.
Okay. Thank you very much. We have more people to talk to. Jeff, thank you. And Darren's in Manchester. And I believe, Darren, you have a Ugandan gay friend waiting for an asylum decision. It was rejected. Tell us more in a second, just to check you're there. Good morning.
Good morning, Nicky.
Hi there, Darren. And John in Shropshire, a criminal lawyer. You deal with these cases, do you?
I do.
Tell us more.
Well, I rarely deal with them on the criminal side, but cases I've been in, one case in particular, where there were a very, very large number of Chinese people involved. And at that stage, it was perfectly clear, A, that they were all illegal immigrants, B, that virtually all of them had claimed asylum, and C, that as your immigration judge said earlier, the fashion at that stage was to claim religious persecution back in China, usually Christian religion. When they were examined, and I have to say, contrary to some of the suggestions that have been made, they were all examined very, very fairly. And I've read many of the transcripts of their questioning. It became absolutely apparent that none of them had the slightest knowledge of the Christian religion. I mean, to the extent of not knowing what the crucifixion was, not knowing who the mother of Jesus was, or how many days it took God to make the world, which is, of course, chapter one in the Bible. So there was a genuine inquiry into the truth of their claims, mm-hmm. and most of them, one or two exceptions, but the vast majority of them were rejected because it was plain that they weren't really, they had no genuine reason to be asylum seekers at all. And that was a fashion thing, rather, as your immigration judge said at that time.
And do you believe there's a new fashion?
Well, I don't know from what he says. It may well be that, for example, as he suggested from Jamaica, there's no doubt that people go along to their lawyers or they're brought in by people traffickers who say, and this is certainly the case with the Chinese, when you get there, say you're suffering from religious persecution and you'll be allowed in. Of course, they've all paid large sums of money to get here. And in fact, most of the time they don't get in because they've been misled by criminals.
Do you think people are now claiming sexual persecution?
Well, I don't know that for myself. But listening to your, as I said, your immigration judge, it seems to me that he was quite clear that that is a current, so to speak, fashionable thing. And one can well see a solicitor, immigration solicitor, saying, well, of course, if you're homosexual, then you'll be able to claim asylum. And they jump on the bandwagon because they want to stay here.
Darren, what do you say?
Good morning, Nishi. Sorry. David, my friend's been here 15 years now. He's from Uganda. He's been, you know, ever since I've met him when he was 20 as well. And I've known he was gay all the time. But when he went for his asylum case, they wanted at the time, proof that, you know, the only reason he could stay in the country if he had a need to stay here, i.e. wife and kids, you know, homeowner. When he went down, obviously, when he told them he was gay from the start, at his hearing, which I was there, the judge said, basically, if you keep quiet when you go back home, you know, you'll have no reason to be persecuted.
This is what we're hearing about, you know, use your discretion. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's awful, but I'm now going back probably nearly 2 years now, where, lucky enough, David's been here in the country 15 years, so we sought out legal representation. So even though he's rejected on the asylum route, he's now gone through a 14-year, sort of been here 14 years route. But, he has to sign on every month. They stopped him working. Whilst he was here, he worked and paid his taxes all the way through. Once they went down the asylum route to get permanent citizenship, they cancelled his NI number, stopped him working, and there was a detention centre or someone had to put him up. So he lives with me now and my wife and three children, which he has done for 18 months, and we're still no closer.
Well, that's very charitable of you, very brotherly.
Well, he's a good friend, you know, he's been in this country just as long as he's been in his own.
Mm. So, but Ben, do you think there's an issue with people pretending to be gay?
Of course, there will be people who make all sorts of bogus claims, and you know, the language is delicate, but it's true.
How do you ascertain the truth?
Well, you have to interview people sympathetically and appropriately. But the hard facts are that 70% of asylum claimants are rejected at first interview, and 98% of people who are lesbian and gay are rejected at first interview. I mean, that's recent research done by the UK Lesbian and Gay Immigration Group, and that does suggest that one group of asylum seekers are being treated in a materially less fair way just because of their sexual orientation, and that's what the UN High Commissioner is complaining to Britain about.
Mm. Darren, do you want to have a last word?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, David's gay. He's been here, I'd say, nearly 15 years. Same thing, one case, you know, thrown out. You know, he's been waiting now 18 months on a decision whether he can remain to leave here without any work. So I think they put it to a battle of attrition. They're hoping these people will just go home themselves, you know. They've cut off all the means of work, all the accommodation. You know, he had his own flat and everything else. He had to give that up. You know, the only place he could turn to was me, really.
We've only got 20 seconds. There are countries where it's illegal to have sex outside marriage, Ben. Should those people be given asylum? It's a text.
Well, that's a matter of choice, isn't it? Sexual orientation is a matter of the way you're born.
Mm. Thank you very much for all the calls. Ben Summerskill from Stonewall, thank you for coming in this morning. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Remember, the phone-in is broadcast live on weekdays from 9 a.m. on 5 Live. But you can continue the conversation at the Breakfast blog via the 5 Live website, bbc.co.uk/5live.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5live.